right, welcome to Season 2, Episode 28, also known as Episode 60 of the Retro Game Club podcast. My name is Hugh, and joining me live from the dentist office is Rob.
Yeah. I'm in my 40s, and my dentist decided I needed Invisalign. Not needed. He asked me if I was open to it, and then all of a sudden I was a lot more broke for, I don't know. I don't know if I need this thing, but now... Now I lisp a lot more for you guys, and I already had a speech impediment, so we'll see how this podcast goes for the next few months.
Yeah. Well, so your dentist wanted a new boat. That's what you're telling me.
Yes. And you're pretty spot on. He talks about his boat a lot, so it's almost like out of a sitcom. But
So my dentist would instead talk about how he had like 5 kids going to Notre Dame. Right. And then he would suggest some expensive work.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to think that they would always be looking out for our own good. And I don't think they're doing damage to us. But sometimes I don't think we need everything that's advised to us, maybe.
Yeah. And the punchline of that is that one of his daughters at Notre Dame ended up marrying a dental student who then took over his practice when he retired. So now my dentist is the son-in-law of my original dentist.
That's strange.
That's the way the world works, I'm afraid.
Well, what have you been up to?
Quite a bit here. So let's see. I somehow managed to order Shakedown Hawaii for the Wii U, which is the last officially licensed Wii U game. So that's the sequel to Retro City Rampage. It went on sale on just like the dude's website. Like this wasn't like a real, I think it was like a Shopify page it took you to.
Okay.
And there were, I don't know, 1,500 copies. And I got an email like 30 minutes after it went on sale saying this thing's on sale. And I'm like, well, I'm never going to get that. And went on it, and it was still, they still had copies for sale. So I guess people were slow or something.
So does it...
Or they figured out the anti-scalping system. I don't
know. Does it use the Wii U controller screen thing?
I don't know. Beats me. I hope it doesn't. I really hope it doesn't, because I would prefer to just play it on the Pro Pad.
Yeah.
But I really like Retro City Rampage. I have it on 2 different systems. I have it on the 3DS and the what's the other thing called, the Vita. I don't know how it's gonna play on the Wii U. Don't really care. I just really wanted to get like the last Wii U game, and I wanted to get any version of this game. Mm-hmm. So I realized I could just download this on PS4 or something today. But just sort of the novelty of getting it on Wii U is very appealing to me.
Yeah.
Let's see, in terms of gaming, I finished Uncharted 4, which is probably my favorite in the series. Really liked it, except for like the epilogue, which is super boring. Outside of that, it was a really good game, so I would highly recommend the series. I was trying to figure out what to start next. I really wanted to play Octopath Traveler. I don't know if you've heard of that. It's a Square Enix RPG.
Yeah.
So it's on the Switch, and I started it up, and I could not read any of the text. It was maybe 4 pixel. Like, I assume they designed this game to only be played on a screen.
Huh.
Right? Because on the Switch Lite, I could not... I mean, I was like... I have pretty good vision. But I had to switch, like, 1 inch from my face, and I could not read any of the dialogue. So I put that aside. Maybe I can get my eyes checked. And I started... Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII on the PSP.
I don't know that one.
So, yeah, it's the prequel to Final Fantasy VII. And I actually wanted to start it after doing Final Fantasy VII Remake, but I didn't. And now I have. So it's kind of like PS2 quality graphics. Definitely PS2 quality camera. But it's... It's pretty good. I actually might like it better than Final Fantasy VII Remake. I mean, you know how it's going to end, because it's following the story of Zack, who's like a character you sort of learn about in Final Fantasy VII, and like you know how his story is going to end going into it. But yeah, it's kind of fun. I like it. Probably we'll be playing that for the next couple of weeks, and I'm kind of just stalling until some other games I pre-ordered come in. You know, I don't want to start any, like, really massive RPGs or anything. Although I guess Crisis Core is probably like an 80-hour game.
Wow.
And then, you know, a couple episodes ago, we were talking about the UltraBox sampler discs. Or it's not so much sampler discs, it's a magazine.
For PC Engine,
it was
right?
a monthly magazine. Yeah, for the PC Engine. And I just did a really quick review of them on my website that we'll include a link to. They're very strange. I would always, like, it's sort of a dream project of mine to do, like, a CD magazine on, like, Sega CD or TurboGrafx CD, something like that. Like, that would be a really awesome project. But it would probably not turn out like UltraBox.
Yeah, it is strange.
So, they're very, very weird. Now, there are some, like, they did develop some really good, like, scanning and in something. Like, there's a lot of scanned images. You know, scanning and conversion. So that part's kind of neat. But outside of that, these are just too weird for me. I don't know. So what have you been up to?
Other than the Invisalign, just so much work. I mean, me and you were talking about it pre-show. And yeah, I just, you know, I have two big projects that I have just been all-consuming. And so not much gaming, just our game club games. You know, I still haven't finished Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Mm-hmm.
I did manage to set up this new microphone I am using right now. So I have no idea how it sounds. I tested it a few days ago. So I hope this sounds good. If not, an apology for this episode. But in theory, it should sound way better. But yeah, I don't have too much to add to this one. I guess we should just go into our news items.
Yeah. And we got a pretty decent amount of news. Some kind of really interesting things. This first one, I think, is yours. The X-Station Optical Disk Drive Emulator Mod Kit.
Yeah, it's another optical replacement. So an SD card for your PlayStation 1. So you already had an option to get a PlayStation Classic, or you could get the, what's the one that we gave away on the show early on?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the name of it right now.
That's how many of these there are.
Yes. Yeah. And then this one now. It's for $99. It looks like it's pretty good quality. You could buy it on Castlemania. So, I don't know. The PlayStation 1 era, it's just, I know there's a lot of good games, but I never feel like going back to play them. And they're all, a lot of them are already available on later systems. So I just don't feel the need for this one.
So the pictures here seem to have a full-size PlayStation. Can this be fit in the miniature model? Looks like it cannot. I say that because I have two miniature PlayStations. So I have one I could sacrifice for a project.
It does have, under compatibility, it lists the model numbers it works on.
Okay. SPs. Okay, well, I won't bore the listeners Googling all the different PlayStation models.
You could do that while I'm rambling on about something. Like, you feel like playing the Quake arcade cabinet at home?
Actually, yes, I do. Quake is a game that's been, I guess it's probably easy to emulate now, but like, I remember back in the day, it was a game that did not work in like later versions of Windows. I seem to recall it was like hard to run Quake for a long time outside of like a computer that still had like DOS compatibility. Mm-hmm. But what is the Quake arcade cabinet?
It was very rare, and it did run, I think, on a Pentium 2 266 with 32 megs RAM and a 27 or 33-inch CRT. So it had a PC built into this arcade cabinet, like a real arcade cabinet, not just like a at-home project type thing. This was out there. There just weren't many of them. And the hard drive, it's only around 225 megs, And it was dumped a long time ago, but finally some guy in GitHub, everyone could take a drink, we mentioned GitHub, finally someone released a de-encryption program for it, so you wouldn't need a dongle to play it anymore. So that's really the big story here, is now you can play at home after you decrypt it.
Yeah, looks cool.
Yeah, yeah, and it's kind of funny because, you know, things it adds is like, you know, you're about to see some violent content, and, yeah, it just has, like, attract mode type stuff, you know?
Yeah, Quake is, like, a shooter that I think could translate to the arcade pretty well. I mean, I realize, like, you know, Doom and Quake are kind of a long game to be standing around, you know, in front of the to be staying in a cabinet for, but I think all of them give you the option to start at later episodes. So it's not like you have to play through 30 levels all in one session. I realize this is like a tournament, like this was meant for fighting, for like one-on-one Quake or whatever, but...
Yeah, and
or
I think
not one-on-one, multiplayer. What do they call it where it's multiple players? Multiplayer, yeah, that's it.
I think this has network capabilities too, but I forget that part. But yeah, so I've never seen one of those in the wild, so that is pretty interesting. There are 5 brand new Dreamcast games being released in 2020.
Yeah, now some of these have been in the works for quite a while. The first one here called Slave, I think they have been talking about for many years. I think Xenosider has been in development quite a while too. Some of these I've not previously heard of though. Intrepid Lizzie, which is a platformer, maybe. I'm not sure what game it most resembles, but sort of a Metroid. Let's call it a Metroid-esque platformer game or Wonder Boy-esque platformer game.
Mm-hmm.
One that I like the visual style of here, Arcade Racing Legends, which looks like a 90s racing game.
Yeah.
And Xenocrisis, which I think is on multiple systems already, and this is like a, you know, upscaled, nicer-looking version of it.
Really, all of these look like fantastic games. Really well done. Really modern. I mean... Xenocrisis looks a little bit less modern.
Yeah, well, I think it started as not a modern game.
Yeah, and that one you could also get on the Switch, yeah, on the PS4 and stuff like that. But this, where's that one? Xenosider. This game just looks really interesting. So, definitely excited to see those. Yeah, it almost looks like a Panzer Dragoon mixed with Rez, I'd say.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty neat. What else do we got?
Meet Treasure Tales. I have a hard time saying that. A Genesis Mega Drive game pitched by Sega Technical Institute. Did I get that right?
I think so, yeah. This would have been... around 1993, and all that was left is a VHS tape, which there's no video here that I could see. It's just some photographs of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard to tell what this game would actually be.
It's a sort of isometric Tales game.
Yeah, with looks like lots of fire in each scene here. Unless it's a really strange looking floor, but yeah. I don't know. It's hard to put any judgment on this because there's not much little detail. In fact, the creator said he actually forgot about it until he found the VHS tape. So
that's a very weird way to pitch the game. So like, I wonder, they must not have had a, I guess how I was going to pitch the game. So if you wrote this Sonic game, the Sonic demo, and you want to pitch it back to Japan, what would be easier, sending them a demo ROM or gameplay footage, because the VHS tape maybe has like 6 hours of random footage of things you're pitching. So I guess maybe that makes more sense.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, pretty strange. Hopefully more of that turns up.
Let's see. Battletoads is another game getting a physical reprint. It's just the original game. So this is I Am 8-Bit. Probably heard of them before. They've done a few other reprints. They're going to be doing 2,000 cartridges at $100 a pop.
That's a lot. That's a lot of money for Battletoads. I'm sorry.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
But I did hear the new Battletoads game is actually really fun. I have not played it, but I've heard pretty good reviews about it.
Yeah, I never really got into any of the Battletoads.
No, I'm sure they'll be a Game Club game for them.
Oh, eventually. I hope not. Okay.
I think this next one is yours, I think. I can't remember.
I don't know. What is it? Oh, yeah, this is kind of a cool... This is a cool tech demo for the Apple II. So someone wrote a game called Murder Manor. It's an adventure game that uses a graphics mode that only certain types of Apple II supported. And because it was sort of a limited graphics mode, no one ever released a commercial game for it. Or if they did, it's extremely obscure. I mean, this article claims no one has ever released a game for it, but... Maybe someone did. Regardless, these people have, and it looks really, really nice. Yeah. Obviously, this would be something you would just play on an emulator.
Yeah, it's almost like ASCII art, moving ASCII art.
Kind of, yeah, yeah. So you can, I don't know, maybe save this for Halloween.
Yeah. And, Enter Your Initials, Preserving the Source Code for Starfire, a 40-year-old arcade game.
Yeah, so this was a blatant Star Wars ripoff. I don't know if you... I've seen this game. I've never... I mean, I've seen it, like, on MAME. I've never seen an actual cabinet, I don't believe.
Neither have I.
Yeah. It is a very, very blatant Star Wars ripoff. And this is just about the effort to, you know, preserve the source code and build it. You know, be able to still... compile it again.
And it was the first game that you could enter your initials for a high score, right?
That's what they're claiming, yeah.
Which seems plausible. I mean, this was 1978.
So. Yep, someone had to be first.
But yeah, this is a pretty detailed article, and I mean, for 1978, it looks like a pretty fine game, but definitely, let's just say it's a product of its era. It's definitely an early arcade game.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's pretty neat. What else? Custom PCB lets you stick a Raspberry Pi inside a Sega Game Gear.
You were looking for a new handheld console, right?
I was. I do have a Game Gear. The screen on it is pretty terrible. I don't think I'm going to do this project. It is pretty neat, though. It's a custom board that you can put a Raspberry Pi 3 into.
Mm-hmm. I would consider this, but...
It would be all right for playing NES and Master System games, and I guess Atari, but... Obviously not useful for, like, Super Nintendo and later.
No. No, you could do, like, Game Boy 2 on it.
Yeah. Okay. Or Lynx.
Yeah, so that's a pretty good library there. Yeah, even PC Engine, TurboGrafx, you could do on there.
Yeah, yeah, as long as you don't need the Rapid Fire.
True, yeah.
So the 2020 Sonic... Hacking contest is now open if you want to submit stuff. It goes... Contest, unfortunately, I probably should have read and got the timeline down before I started trying to discuss it here. But yeah, if you want to submit something to... If you're interested in Sonic hacks, you know, you can you can submit something. The other cool thing is you can just download stuff from here. Like they have every Panasonic hack that's been submitted. And there's a lot of good stuff. You go to their site, and you click the link that says The Vault. It takes you to like every previous entry going back quite a few years.
Nice. Yeah, I'm not smart enough for something like this yet.
I hope it's not the Hedgehog. There's a lot of tools.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't have to necessarily, you know, do any real hacking.
Almost like a Mario Maker type thing.
Yeah. Now some people do things like porting Sonic the Hedgehog to Atari 2600. That's not a project on there that I know of. I'm just saying it's the kind of thing that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that might be a fun project. I don't know. Okay, Launchbox 11.3 has experimental Linux support, sort of.
Kind of. So it always kind of worked in Linux with Wine. Now they kind of made it official, except it's still with Wine. It's just they created a bash file you can run in your Linux command line that installs and downloads and installs everything and configures it. So making Launchbox and Bigbox a lot easier in Linux. And a lot of people don't realize that Wine runs really well, especially if you're coding for it to run well. In Linux now. So apparently this works really well. And remember, you're still going to have the Linux native emulators. So it's, you know, Launchbox just launches stuff. So it's not like you're going to be emulating on an emulator. It's just going to be native.
Yeah, I'll probably, maybe when they get to 12, I will be willing to try it.
Yeah. And it's funny, you know, this news item is for 11.3 being released, but only 2 days later, 11.4 was already released with some bug fixes. None of them Linux related. there's another contest here.
Oh, yeah, look at that. The Atari Lynx programming contest. This is actually the results now. So I think we talked about the Atari Lynx programming contest earlier in the year. And now this is an article saying that the games are available for download.
Someone squeezed Nintendo Wii into a Game Boy Color-like case.
Okay.
I mean, this is really impressive. This is on reportdoor.com. I don't know if we've ever been to this website before.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever heard of this site before,
but really impressive, actually. You know, and he obviously recommends hacking your Wii so you can use SD card for all your games, but it has a nice big screen and, you know, built-in lithium, you know, USB chargeable battery, speakers, and they don't talk about how long it runs, but this looks like a nightmare to put together. I mean, you do need to hack up your PC board a little bit and do some crazy stuff.
This is not a project for rookies.
No, this isn't the previous put a Raspberry Pi in your... Well, no, the Sega, what was it? Was it the Nomad or the Game Gear that we just reported on? The Game Gear. That is a custom PC board. So there's nothing you need to do with this. You have to hack it apart. So, probably not going to do this one ever. I have problems just having my Wii run to begin with. So I can't even imagine. 38 years later, the Atari 2600 learns to speak. It probably speaks better than I do right now.
Well, you know, it doesn't. So this is about someone who wrote a voice synthesizer for the Atari 2600. It sounds like a total nightmare, but I don't mean like the work to do it. I mean, the voice itself sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely on par with the Intellivision analog to this.
The Intellivoice sounds better than this. Now, of course, that was actually made for the purpose of doing speech, right? So.
Yeah, this was done in 128 bytes, looks like.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and really, it's not, I mean, like, playing sound on the Atari is not that hard. So it's really, this is more about someone being able to figure out the algorithm to make the you know, audio hardware in the Atari sound like a voice.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, I mean, obviously that's the hard part.
All of it is the hard part.
Mm-hmm.
And is that our last news item? Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Powered through those. We, like I said, I've been super busy and I think you have too. So there's, no topic for this week. The stuff we were still working on, we're still working on it. And really one of those topics, you know, was going to be, at least for me, RetroArch related. So that's obviously on hold.
Mm-hmm.
But working on some new interviews and stuff like that. But we always got Game Club.
Yeah. Yeah, we got a couple interesting games.
Mine is there listed first, so I guess I'll go. I went with Wrecking Crew, a Nintendo Mario Brothers game that I think is not as known. It was released the same year as Super Mario Brothers in 1985. And yeah, you play as Mario or Luigi and you climb up ladders and fall down. And while you're trying to break apart, I guess it's a building, but or construction zone. And there's these little guys that are chasing you that could get you. You can't jump because of the weight of the hammer, I guess is what the lore is. And yeah, you break ladders, blocks, there's bombs that, you know, kind of destruct everything around it a little bit. There's a door that if the bad guys run into, they are in the background and they can't harm you anymore. I really like the music and the audio in this. It was done by the same guy that did Balloon. It sounds just like Balloon Fight, actually, but he did, what else did he do? Balloon Fight and like Earthbound. And then the head designer did Metroid and Donkey Kong Jr. And you could definitely tell the Donkey Kong Jr. part. This is described as an action game, but for me, it's almost more of a puzzler game because not only do you have to figure out how to do stuff as fast as possible, but you could get yourself into an unwinnable state where you just have to die in order to reset the level.
Yeah.
And, like, for example, if you bust a ladder and there's some at the top of the ladder that you needed to get to, you just can't get there anymore. It does introduce a character in it, a foreman, construction foreman named Spike. But I like this game. I really do. It's one that I haven't played much simply because it just feels to a kid, and while just, you know, maybe watching a screenshot or something, it just looks more dated than Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I mean the graphics look very, very dated. Like the kind of, I don't know, it's the colors or the detail, but it looks considerably older than games that came out in the same year.
Even Super Mario Brothers and. Yeah. Mario himself looks pretty similar, but the rest just looks more, I don't know, boxy. But I highly recommend this game if you've never gotten into it. And I mean, I played by emulating it. Or no, I played on the Switch. That's right. But yeah. You could get this for pretty cheap, too, if you wanted to buy a cartridge. Yeah, what do you think of this one?
Yeah, so I've only played this, in including now, on NES Remix. That's always been my go-to way because you're only playing it in kind of small doses. I'm not a huge fan of this game. I think it's okay. It's not one I would normally fire up. But NES Remix are basically given like challenges on different stages.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels more like a puzzle than an action game. Like, I realize NES Remix, there's a timer and you are really like heavily encouraged to get stuff done quickly, because that's how you unlock, that's how you earn stars to like unlock more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, a lot of it is like you have to look at the board and be like, okay, what's the path through this screen? You know, like, what's the fastest path through the screen? And as you mentioned, like, you can get stuck. I definitely, there were times where I got into an unwinnable state, and because NES Remix, it's not like you can reset the board. You know, you basically just have to die, then you're trying it all over again.
Yeah, yeah. It blows my mind that this came out about the same time that Super Mario Brothers did. You know what I mean? They just...
Yeah, it feels like it's more of like like another take. It feels like it's an evolution of Mario Brothers, although you don't have jumping. It sort of feels like it would have been out the same time as the original Mario Brothers. Not Super Mario Brothers, regular Mario Brothers.
Or like you're on, maybe you're still a construction worker like you were in Donkey Kong. Maybe it's more of a Donkey Kong sequel.
Yeah, maybe. Was Mario a construction worker in Donkey Kong, or did it just happen to take place at a construction site?
Oh, that I don't know. Good question.
I think Mario had no discernible career at that point.
He was just hanging out.
He's just a drifter, yeah. Yeah, not sure. Because I think he became a plumber because of Mario Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
But then now he's just like a Homer Simpson character, right? Just like his job is not important.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's a tennis player. He's a kart racer.
He's a musician, painter, whatever. Does not do a lot of plumbing related things anymore.
But I'm looking right now. Yeah, you could get this on the eShop and the Virtual Console and Game Boy Advance.
Yeah, I think it was one of the ones that got the Game Boy Advance when they did like all the NES. If it's not like as an NES cart, it's one of the swipey things. What are those called, where you had the reader and you'd swipe the cards to load the game?
Yeah, I can't remember what those are called. Huh. The Famicom Mini Series, it says. So, yeah, not much more to say about this. It does say there's a sequel called Wrecking Crew 98. In Japan, but I've never heard of that until literally just now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard of it, and I seem to recall it was not maybe great.
But I mean, if you're paying for the Switch Online service, just give it a play. You know what I mean? If you haven't played in a while.
Mm-hmm.
One stupid thing is I'm on the Wrecking Crew Wikipedia page right now.
Okay.
And there's not that many, you know how there's links within Wikipedia to other Wikipedia sites? Well, there's not many in this one, but one of them is Doors. Doors may also exist, and if you hover over Doors, it takes you to a Doors Wikipedia page, like an actual like door on your house.
Oh, an article about... I wasn't sure if it was which Doors it was going to go to.
And then cassette tapes, too. Well, I guess people might know what it... Younger people might not know what a cassette tape is, but I think everyone has a basic idea of what a door does in this world. I guess that was totally random.
Sure, it's possible people don't know what a door is, depending where you were raised. I don't know. Like maybe you're raised in some sort of weird commune.
A doorless commune, and it's...
Yeah, yeah. Like where Joakim Phoenix was raised, something like that. You know that the Phoenix brothers, you know, River and
Leaf,
Joakim Phoenix, they like lived in some weird hippie pseudo, some sort of weird hippie-ish cult. I don't know if there's a religious element to it or not.
I think it was the Children of God, right? And I'm pretty sure.
Okay, then in that case, I guess it would.
I'm pretty sure something that was like that. Not good for anyone. I'm pretty sure there's a Netflix special about it.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't turn into Jonestown or anything, but. All right, so that got really dark.
Speaking of dark, your game.
Yeah, Snatcher, which is, I played a little bit of this with one of my kids. Again, they were pricing my collection recently, you know, preparing for when I fall over dead, I guess. Again, joke's on them. If I outlive most Gen Xers, then my collection of games is worthless. But yeah, we played for a little bit, and I forgot how, like, kind of cringy and inappropriate a lot of the dialogue is. Oh, yeah. Like, it's a game by today's standards would definitely need some work. So, again, Snatcher is like an interactive fiction game. There is like a shooting mini game, but that is really kind of a very small part of the game, and it's super easy. So it's really more about, like, you're going from scene to scene, you investigate everything in each scene, and then some stuff happens. It's a fairly linear story. It's not real tough to figure out the puzzles. So it's I really think of it more like an interactive story than a puzzle game.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But it was pretty cutting edge at the time. It had really great graphics, almost full voice acting, or at least a lot of voice acting. And it's presented in a very cinematic way. So I found it to be kind of a groundbreaking game. The story is really just Blade Runner. Almost no differences between it and Blade Runner, but I guess people weren't being that litigious at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The part that's kind of cringy is, like, you're this detective, and it's like your first day in the job, and you can spend basically the first day of the job just hitting on the receptionist.
That would always go over well.
Right. Like, you have all these, that's basically how you can spend your first day there if you choose. And he really doesn't let up. I mean, this guy does not take no for an answer, it seems. So that part's, you know, maybe not aged so well. But otherwise, it's a really cool game to kind of play through and experience. It has a really, really awesome soundtrack. Did you get a chance to listen to the soundtrack and play through it?
Yeah, I heard some of it, yeah. Yeah, really good.
I probably should have had the composer name up in front of me, but I was not smart enough to do that.
Kojima coded this, which I did not know.
Yeah. I think the game engine, if you will, is not particularly difficult.
No.
I actually at some point thought about creating a game in this style, and the engine, like the, you know, choose stuff and inventory, like all the menus and all that stuff, that part's pretty easy. The part that I can't do is the graphics. Right, that's where I got stuck.
That would take, like, forever.
Right, if you want something to look nice, like, I could do a Snatcher style game that looked like garbage. That part's really easy. And of course, coming up with a story. If it wasn't for the story and the graphics, I could easily do a Snatcher game. And also the music. There's a lot of different versions of this. Getting an original, like getting it in English, is really difficult. I think Sega CD is about the only English release. I mean, there's probably like some, you know, I didn't really look into it real deeply, but maybe there was a, I don't think there were any versions released on PC in the UK or something. There's no US PC releases, but there's like MSX, PC-88, PlayStation, Saturn, and TurboGrafx CD, all of those are Japan exclusives.
Hmm.
So they're not in English. The PC Engine CD version happens to be included on the TurboGrafx 16 Mini or whatever they're calling it. And you can play it. It's just, it would be really hard to play without a walkthrough. You know, if you don't know Japanese.
So did you get yours at like mega discount price when you worked at the store?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hold on. I might have a picture of the receipt. I was thinking of adding a section on my website of receipt images of like random junk that I got really cheap in the 90s. But then I'm like, would I be like inviting people to come and like rob me? That's the trade off.
Pretty much. Yeah.
I don't have a picture of my of a Snatcher receipt. Well, hold on one second. Let me go grab my copy of Snatcher. Hold on. All right. So now I have a camera. So here's boxed copy of Snatcher.
Ooh. Nice.
And somewhere in here, I think I did stash the receipt inside the manual. Let me see. Oh, here it is. Electronics Boutique receipt.
How much?
$14.99.
Wow.
Purchased. Oh, I can't read this receipt, man. This is old. I am going to take a picture of this for posterity. Purchased on February 12th, 1995. Happy Valentine's Day to me. February 12th. Snatcher for $14.99.
What year? What year was that? 95?
95, yes.
So I can't see the date that was released. I see other versions, like its first release was 19... Oh, there we go. I found it. January 95 it was released in North America. So it was only a month old at that
point. Really? Okay, sure.
That's amazing.
Sega CD wasn't really doing very well in 1995.
No.
So... yeah, $14.99. There you go.
That's amazing. That's definitely well worth it. That's a pretty good game, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So, did you play this?
Only for, geez, not even an hour, and then I just had it in a window in a walkthrough video, mm-hmm. just because that was my only option this week. Because, like I said, work.
Yeah. Well, walkthrough video is actually not a bad way to experience Snatcher.
Exactly. That's what I figured too. You know, they don't really work for like, you know, a racing game or something like that. Cause you really don't, the whole point of those or like a sports game, you know, is like to get into the action, but this is just kind of like following the story. What game are you going to do next time for the game?
You know, I've been actually, I guess the NBA is back for the second time this year. And I've really been enjoying the playoff games this year. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the Bulls are long gone. They didn't even make it to, the bubble. Like their record was so bad, they didn't even make it to the place, you know, to the initial round to determine who was going to be in the playoffs. So I'm going to go back to, 1998 and I'm doing NBA Live 98. And I intentionally picked that one because it's on so many different systems.
Whoa. Yeah. Definitely is.
So you can pick any version of NBA Live 98. It's on PlayStation, PC, Sega Saturn, Super Nintendo, and Sega Genesis.
Nice.
And what about you?
I'm going to do Atlantis on 2600. Just a game I didn't have much experience with. So now is the time. No reason for it. I just I decided I wanted an Atari game this time, so I went with that one. And if any of our listeners play any of these games or have any cool projects or news they want to share, emulation setups, anything you want to tell us about, email at retrogameclub.net. That is email at retrogameclub.net. And Adam wrote us during the podcast. Hugh, you mentioned downsizing your collection and mm-hmm. spending less money. And he had some similar thoughts about his habits. He would recommend modding your Wii U if you have one, which you do.
Mm-hmm. I have one with a dead disk drive.
Yeah. He's saying it has an excellent version of RetroArch. It plays PS1 games great. And it plays really everything from Nintendo other than 3DS pretty well. And it's really nice to organize his games on the Wii U home screen. He played Pitfall and A Link to the Past on it. And he said it ran great. So cool. Adam, thanks for that email.
Yeah, sounds good. So I would not... Wii U, I don't want to mess up my Wii U. But I'm wondering, a Wii with a dead disk drive. I assume you can load games from the USB card on there, USB slot?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if it's anything like the Wii, you can.
No, but yeah, okay. So I'll have to look into what it would take, because I do have that original Wii. I have an original Wii that's dead, but the Wii U still works, so I don't necessarily want to hack up the Wii U. Of course, Wii U, I'll probably be finding those at yard sales soon. Let's see. Majors writes in talking about your component upscaler and falling into the rabbit hole of trying to achieve AV perfection. and that you should maybe consider learning to accept working well enough, which, yes, I have done. Rob, you mentioned the money pit horror story that can happen when someone tries to do an arcade cab restoration.
Yes.
He recommends buying a beater cabinet to set up MAME or another multicade solution. Because if you pick a beater and you do a bad job, I guess it's okay.
Well, that's the thing. Well, with beaters too, I mean, if you want side art or if you want to, let's say you even want to just sand it down and make it all nice. I mean, a sander is expensive if you don't own one. Paint, even spray paint gets up in money. Like, things just cost more than you expect. If you want a CRT screen, you're probably going to have to recap it. If you want to do that yourself, you're going to need a... and again, this is for people that are just getting into this. So they probably don't have all the tools, like a soldering iron and stuff like that. I mean, you could use an LCD screen, but again... I understand what he's saying, but, takes a long time and it's still more expensive than you would think it would be. But sorry, go on.
Nope, that's it. Advice to not update RetroArch. Oh, that was me probably. And he mentions about, like, he generally doesn't update stuff if it works, because he had an experience when he was running Laka and upgraded because there was a new version, but it turns out they changed the Atari Lynx emulator, and it now no longer worked for him. Tapper bar layout. The question was brought up as to why the bar area in Tapper was set up as such. And he assumes it must be to maximize price per countertop surface area. Yeah, no social distancing in the Tapper bar, that's for sure. Wrecking games of the episode. He sold a Snatcher for Sega CD a while ago. I don't know what he got for it. That would be kind of interesting. I know it goes for a lot now. He said it really didn't have any replay value for him. And wants to recommend Parasol Stars, which is on the new TurboGrafx thing, and RoboCop versus Terminator on the Genesis. I like both of those games, so maybe at some point I'll pick one of them.
Yeah.
I do not like RoboCop movies. I realize that's... People seem to think I'm weird for that, but I don't like the RoboCop movies at all. What's your opinion on RoboCop?
I think the first two are fun, you know, but they also take place in a... you know, dystopian Detroit future, which is what I currently live in. So it's pretty close to home to me. And Detroit does have a giant, I don't know if it's gold, but gold color RoboCop statue now.
a giant robe. Okay, well. He's so as a city, you're celebrating this movie that makes your city look terrible?
Yes, and that was also filmed in Houston.
Huh.
Only in Detroit.
All right. Well, there you go. social media question. Retro gaming setup. We must have asked that.
We did, yes.
He says he has a large CRT for composite and S-video and a smaller CRT for RGB systems. His 15 consoles hooked up, so it's a big mess. And then he has a do-it-yourself plywood in 2x4 entertainment center. Okay. I would never try that. Three power strips daisy chained, all connected to a wall outlet that is controlled from a wall light. And for sound, he has a pair of two-way floor standing speakers running off basic 20-watt amp. That's still pretty loud. And then an old netbook connected up to run Batocera for emulation. We talked about Batocera. We probably did a whole episode about it.
I think it was like a Laka alternative.
Okay. And then a handful of flashcards, mostly, you know, because he prefers playing on original hardware. And then he has a few Japanese consoles, too. Just to run, you know, for region-locked games. Cool?
Nice.
I do not own that many. Do I own Japanese consoles? Probably not. I own some adapters, but that's about it.
Yeah, I collect for nostalgic stuff, so I don't really go into the Japanese stuff. But Duncan writes in, He also asked or is answering about his retro gaming setup. And he says for anything like SNES or Genesis generation, he uses a Mister. And it works great on his flat screen, zero lag and all that stuff. Previous to the Mister, he used a Raspberry Pi and just couldn't get over how laggy it was and how it was a bit buggy. And he was just spending more time fixing it or setting up the menu and stuff like that. I could definitely relate to that. The Mister doesn't have as many cores as the Raspberry Pi or other systems, but are you really going to play that many games? For Saturn and Dreamcast, he uses original console with the OSSC transcoder, and it works great on his flat screen. He has a Saturn that's region-free and can play backup discs. And, you know, reminds us that the Dreamcast doesn't need any modding to play backup discs. Yeah, he had these two systems on a nice big CRT. But he decided to get the OSSC to get that space back. Yeah. And then circling back to emulation, he doesn't have an answer to PS1 or N64. He's just waiting for a cost-effective, no-lag way to do it. Hopes that Mister will finally be able to do something like that, but doesn't know if it has enough horsepower. He says he really recommends us to get into the Mister. I definitely agree. I definitely want a Mister. It's just right now I'm like on a buying freeze and it's till I get past this work stuff. So I just don't have a bunch of projects sitting there unfinished, you know? But I definitely relate to the PS1 and N64 and even Saturn, no lag options. There's just nothing out there. I mean, other than EverDrives.
Yeah.
But, yeah, thank you guys for those, emails. And we did have some, social media feedback. Rick writes in and saying, he loves Tappers, but, he'd love to get his own setup one day. And then Andy writes in about the R360 at Galloping Ghost. He loved it. He was on a lot and got shouted by the attendant once because all his change was falling out of his pockets. That's funny.
Yeah. Nice.
For me, I'd get yelled at for puking or something and then ruin it for everyone.
Yeah, I don't know if I could. I don't know if I could ride that thing. Yeah, I think I would probably puke as well.
Well, if anyone else wants to write in, that's email at retrogameclub.net or facebook.retrogameclub.net or Twitter at RTC Podcast. And we hope to hear from you all. And I think that I think that's about it.
Yeah. Yeah, so thanks for listening.